Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Let's chat with a man who's created his own piece of boxing history's legacy on Merseyside, one of the great fighters that we've seen in this generation. He's decided to call it a day. He's had more than 50 fights. It is, of course, Derry Matthews. Morning, Derry.
Morning.
Right, okay, let's just reflect, first of all, the fight at the weekend. You went into it firmly believing you could do something against O'Hara Davis. But in hindsight, looking at it now, what's your thoughts on how it went?
No, well, the fight never went the way it went to plan, but, I mean, the training camp, everything in the build-up, my body was perfect, I was in great condition, and it's just one of them, you go old overnight, and I believe that in the fight, I went old overnight. I've watched it back once, and that was enough for me to just say, nah, I know what, I'm done. And even when obviously when I got stopped, Danny said to me, it's done now, and went, yeah, I understand that, I accept that. And even in the build-up to the fight, me and Danny spoke, and I spoke to my family and everyone. I said, well, if I win this fight, but I don't feel I could do things what I should have been able to do as I walked away, even if I won. And after the first round, he hit me with a big right hand. He burst my eardrum. We talked, I broke my jaw. I told the hospital, and I've got to go back in today. Hopefully, you know, touch wood, I don't need an operation. But they're thinking I do need one on the jaw and the eardrum. So, but apart from that, I'm in good health. I've done well out of boxing. I've met some great people, met some bad people. But at the same time, you know, I'm healthy. I've got a new baby on the way, and I couldn't be an happier man.
You've had one heck of a career. You talk about growing old overnight. This applies to any sport, doesn't it? I mean, you look at footballers. All of a sudden, you see. Maybe the pace not there anymore, or maybe you just see the lack of ability against a younger player. Is it that obvious to you as a sports person who's competed at the very highest level? All of a sudden, do you know inside yourself?
Yeah, I do. But then at the same time, on a football pitch, you've got 10 of your mates, so you can you can sort of hide behind them. And on Saturday night, I was in the spotlight. I was basically chief supporter Tony Bellew. There'd been a lot of drama in the media and the build-up to the fight, and so it was. You know, the spotlight was on me, and the reception I got in London, I couldn't believe it. Even the Londoners, the Cockneys, people from all over Britain, some people from over the world. Paulie Malignaggi had a lot of fans there, and all his fan base come up to me. And you know, walking the ring, the atmosphere was electric. It was like being at home. I was shocked. I brought a tear to my eye, and I was like, wow, I'm a Scouser fighting in London, getting this reception. This shouldn't be happening. He walks to the ring and gets booed, and I'm like, this is crazy. It's like a film. But, you know, it's one of them things. It's been and it's gone, and now it's time to pass my knowledge on to some of the other kids, the up-and-coming kids coming through the city.
So despite losing and what happened at the weekend, you don't regret that fight, because it was a chance to have that one last experience, which sounds like it is almost a bit, I use this phrase a lot, it's almost a bit of a drug, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a drug, and... But I'm one of them, like, listen, there's loads of fighters out there who shouldn't be fighting now. They should be called a day, but they carry on fighting. And they carry on fighting, whether it's for the money or whatever. But I don't want to. I'm one of them fighters where, you know, I've done what I can do. I know I'm clever. I'm not soft. I know my own body. And, you know, in my eyes, he's not just a trainer. He's like a brother, father figure to me, Danny Vaughan. And if he tells me I'm not doing it no more, I'm not doing it no more.
Ah, right. So it's not an individual stubborn decision yourself.
I've got... And my wife walked back when I went back in the changing rooms, and Danny Vaughan goes, that's it now. And she's like, thank God, David Leaf's gone. Not like, it's done. She went, I can't put up with that no more. I've got a son who's 12. Got a text message off him in the changing room saying, are you okay, Dad? I said, yeah, I'm sound. He said, that... Hopefully that's the last one in it. And I said, yeah. And he's like, yes, I'm made up. So things like that, you think, you know, it is there. But I knew in the ring as well. I knew after the first round it weren't there. And it's one of them things where, but as I keep saying, fighters keep going on and on and on and on. And they're doing their own damage. And just be happy. I'm happy as anything. It's a relief off my shoulders. I can eat what I want. I don't have to do the running track when I want. When I've got it, I don't have to... There's things where I can enjoy now. I can go and enjoy my life with my mates. I can go and come on, boys, holidays. I can, you know, from the age of eight, I've stuck everything I can into boxing, and I think I've done well out of it.
I mean, to be fair to you, you're one of the most disciplined fighters, aren't you? Your camps are ridiculously extreme when you've gone through them.
Yeah, well, even like before this camp, before that fight, sorry, people said, "Oh, do you think you can win?" I went, well, if I want to win, if I don't think I want to win, I wouldn't be spending the fight. I went to LA, cost me a fortune. I spent some time in LA. I moved to Scotland. I was away for 8 weeks. I didn't see my son or my wife for 8 weeks. So that's what the discipline I had to do, because I believed I could win.
What? Why do you always do that? Is that sort of not wanting to have the emotion of being around your family while you're in training camp? Or
basically, my trainer lives in Scotland, so it's wherever he is.
It's easier.
Yeah, wherever he is, I have to go, and it's the belief I had in Danny. You know, I could have made it easier. I could have went to a Liverpool coach, but there's no one in Liverpool who motivates me like he can motivate me. And you know, and I went through a phase where I retired for 18 months back in the day when I was 25, 26. Come back, joined Oliver Harrison. Had some great times with Oliver, and we're still close mates now. But the motivation weren't there. It weren't like, and then I got offered the first qualified. I rang Danny and said, well, I've been offered this fight, and there's only one fella that wanted to train me, and it's you. And that's how we got back together. It was one of them. It was a mad story, but when we come, you know, close again.
Inseparable after that point. Interestingly enough, Tony Bellew was training him. Was it Doncaster or Rotherham? It was Rotherham, wasn't it? So Rotherham. But he was coming home every night, wasn't he? He wanted to see the family.
Yeah,
every night.
Yeah, he likes to see his kids and his family. Don't get me wrong, I'm a family man, but at the same time, Tony was doing heavyweight, so he doesn't have to cut weight. He doesn't have to make weight. If he was doing light heavyweight, could you be bothered after training, being tired, driving all the way home?
It's a different state of mind, isn't it? But your body feels different.
You know, I have to eat at certain times. So if I'm in the car on the way home from Scotland, where do we eat? All right, I can go to the service station, but you're not eating good food. What you should be eating, you shouldn't be getting the rest you should be getting. And to be fair, though, my wife come up one weekend to Scotland. My other friend from Liverpool, Ryan Moorhead, he boxed in Scotland. And my wife always likes to watch Ryan fighting. So my mate drove her up for me, and she spent the weekend with me, and then they went home. So that was a bit of a break. But apart from that, it's work.
Isolate yourself, get yourself prepared. There was a moment when you lost at the weekend and you sat down for your interview, and there was this outpouring of emotion, which I think is interesting in hindsight, because as you say, you already knew. You knew in the first round. You probably knew before the fight, but you know where you were at in terms of your fight career. But was that when it really struck you, when the TV cameras went on you and O'Hara Davis was talking to the interviewer?
Yeah, it did. And to be honest, I haven't watched the interview back. It's you know, you've done something you've loved from the age of eight. It's like you've lost a massive part. But at the same time, you know, I've met good people. I keep going on. I've met good people. I've done good things in boxing. And, I count myself as one of the lucky ones. People say, "Oh no, you're a hard worker." I said, "Nah, I'm lucky. I've had good people from when I turned 18. When I was 18, I turned professional. I had a good backer. I had a good sponsor. Someone who paid me monthly wages. And then nowadays, if you're 18 and turned professional, you've got to do it on your own. If there's not someone who can, you know, guide you. So
is it tougher now?
I wouldn't know, because there's social media and that's out there now, so I think you can get more high profile quicker. When I turned professional, there was no social media. We were on the Nokia 3210s or something like that, so there was no Twitter, no, I think MySpace was out or whatever they were called, and it was hard. But now, like, I've had my time. Now I want to, you know, move on, pass the knowledge on to someone else, and I look back with no regrets. I've done everything. I've met people. I've done it the hard way. I've come back off 3 defeats before. Now I'm going out. It's weird. We were speaking about this. I had 3 defeats, retired, left boxing for 2 years, and I've had 3 defeats.
Oh, Derry, don't say that. Not in front of your missus.
Not a chance in this world. I'm coming back. Not a chance in this world. I'm not even going to hit a bag. I don't even think it's just going to, you know, hopefully pass the knowledge on to someone else, and hopefully the kids in the city will listen.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Okay, we have Derry Matthews in the studio. Decided to hang up the boxing gloves after his defeat to O'Hara Davis, but what a career he has led. And that leads us on to talking about legacy and boxing legacy within Merseyside. Now, you're far too sort of proud yourself to hype yourself up, but actually, if you look through your fights, you must feel you've left a pretty damn good boxing legacy. After everything, the Crawler fight, there's so many brilliant ones, you know. Defeats and wins. That fight you had in Hull, you know, the last round, you look like you're on the edge of a defeat, and then you unleash the most brilliant shot to sort of floor your opponent, Tommy Coyle. You must feel like you've left a great legacy there, Derry.
Yeah, that's just the way. I'm just a fighting man, and I like to have, you know, proper fights. I could be sitting here now on the back of 52-0, no defeats, but fighting basically journeyman or foreign imports, and that's not me. That's not, like, I'm not one of them fighters. I want to fight the best, and even on Saturday, I've never boxed at 140, the weight, but someone was calling me out on social media, so the first thing I done was ring Tony Bellew and say, make this fight happen, and Tony made it happen for me, so I've got him to thank as well. And, you know, I'm just one of them fighters. I'd fight anyone, anywhere, and I didn't ask how much money I was getting. I just turned up and boxed and got paid.
Has that never been a concern for you, the finance of it all?
Well, yeah and no. At the same time, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you're a prize fighter. You want to be paid, and you know, and I've seen loads of fighters from over the city and all over the world who they've gone into boxing and they've come out of boxing with nothing. And you know, I was smart and clever. I've bought houses and I've been wise with my money, and I've got a good wife who knows what she's doing with me, and it's been good. It's been a journey, and it's one like I've enjoyed really.
What have you learnt as your career's advanced? How did you develop? Do you think as a boxer?
As a boxing man, it's like, you know, I've had ups, I've had downs, and you know who your friends are. You meet good people, you meet bad people. And
what's the worst low? Where did it hit sort of rock bottom for you during your career?
I'd say when I lost three fights on the run, and that was a much lower thing. I don't know whether I was in depression, but I felt like now that I'm older. You know what you find out, what you read in, what depression, all that is. I might have been in depression, but I don't know. I was in a rut. I couldn't seem to get out of it. Didn't want to leave my house. Didn't want to socialise with anyone. And I lost loads of my mates, if I'm honest to it. I moved away from where I'm from, moved to another part of the city. And I lost a lot of friends. I've gained them back over the years, obviously. You know, you make up, you apologise to your people, And you go from there.
And was it boxing that did that to you? Do you feel like, you know, you lost three on the run, you didn't see your self-worth, you know, you had no enthusiasm for the sport anymore, or what was it?
Yeah, I'd say it was that. And even that, yeah, I'd say it was the sport. I was a proud man. I hated losing at anything, whether it was running competitions in the gym. I hated losing, and I lost three on the bounce to three people I should have beat. I've gone from being a WBU world champion, and at the time, the WBU was a big belt. I was earning okay money. You know, I was getting great sponsorship. I was sort of like the face of everything. You're like, one minute, like, can you go to this, open this nightclub, open this bar, but on the radio, what do you do, radio interview, and then it just stops. It's just like, what happens now? Do you know what I mean? It's like someone...
That's hard to take, isn't it, when you're essentially...
Someone's like... press the switch and it's gone. And that's why, like, the boxing, British Boxing Board, I've said it from that time, that there should be something after boxing. There should be guidance, like the footballers, there's always the PFA. Their pension's off for the rest of their life. If they want to do the football badges, they get the badges done, paid for them. We have to go and do our own. We can't ring the boxing ball and go, I want to be a coach. And they just go, okay, you want to be a coach? Pay this much money to be a coach. So there's no fallback after boxing. It's just that, you know, the people around you, that's who you've got to fall back on, and they guide you and make it into another man, another coach, another manager, trainer, whatever you know your goal is.
Yeah, pathway should really be created. Well, what was it that snapped you out of those dark times when you as you're saying, you lost mates, you weren't yourself? What got you back on track? A lot of sports people will probably, you know, associate with what you're saying. They'd have had some pretty dark days themselves.
Yeah. You know what? It was strange because I started doing a boxing academy. I was going around youth clubs and schools, coaching kids. A Good Knife and Crime project it was, getting, you know, trying to, like, get kids into education and guide them in the right way. And then I was in Croxted. I was doing one Croxted, not a screen. We done one over in Birkenhead with Sean Trodden, which was great. We done one in the Shrewsbury House in Everton. I think we done one Rock Ferry as well. And then a kid comes up to me in the middle of Croxted Sports Centre and says, oh, when are we going to see you fight? And I was like, I don't fight no more. And then it's mad. I'd just met my girl, who's now my wife, just like 8 years ago. I just met her. And I went home and I was just looking and I went, I want to fight again. And she went, what? And at the time, when I met her, I didn't box. I'd never put her.
Yeah.
She didn't know I was a boxer. She didn't know anything. And I went, I want to fight again. She just went, are you serious? I went, yeah. And then I wanted to do it to prove to her I could and to see this kid see me fight. So then I said to my mum, I want to have another fight. And she was like, oh, please, no. We've been through it all. You're happy again. You've met Michelle. You're doing something you love doing. I went, nah, I'll be all right. I want to fight. And then I remember, do I knew you were going to fight? I went, I'll find someone to fight. And I boxed Scott Lawton. I think all I went in prize fights, was it? No, sorry, I went in, I boxed Christian Leite or Daniel Thorpe. And then I remember the promoter saying to me how much money I'm going to get. And I said, I don't want the money. Give me money and tickets. And I remember getting the tickets and I gave them to all the kids who were coached. So we had like 50 in each centre and I just gave them all the tickets and said, come and watch me fight. And that. So I didn't do it for the money. I just done it because I wanted to prove a point, and I haven't looked back. And to this day, I still see this kid all the time.
So you do. I was going to say, does
he's a national champion now. The kid's boxed for England. Everything. He's a national champion.
Did you ever tell him the story?
Yeah. You know, he knows. He's from Croxted ABC, little Scott. And you know, he's a gay little fighter as well. And I go watch him. So you know. It's crazy.
But amazing how just a short conversation sparked another 6 years of your career.
Yeah.
And also, within that 6 years, you had... Well, is it fair enough to say your crawler fights were the ones that...
No, but if I say the crawler fights, people are going to say, you're only saying them because, you know, you beat a man, he's a man killer. But what are my best fights? And I like the Chewy one. I like the Chewy, the second one. But I don't like the first one because he destroyed me on the first one. But the second one... It made me, like, you know, realise that I'm back in the mix here. Someone who annihilated me, someone who battered me, you know, I've come back and I've manned up and I've beat him, and I thought I'd beat him comfortably. And it was also got round of the year in fight of the year in prize fighter.
I think your style sort of contributes to all that, doesn't it? They never say die attitude, the bit of the heart that goes on.
That's it.
Within it. The second crawler fight, was it a draw?
I had myself winning by two rounds.
I had you winning.
Right, a lot of people had me winning. I've had a lot of Manx people had me winning, but then some of my mates had a draw. Some of my mates had me getting beat. It's one of them things. I'll always say.
Is there nothing more frustrating than that when you think you've won a fight and it gets called a draw?
Especially because you know, and I know me and Anthony got peanuts for that fight. We sold the Echo
Arena. Really?
Yeah. Sold the Echo.
Great lad, by the way. Isn't he?
He's a diamond. And I hope he beats Linares. I really, really do. We got pennies for that fight, and I remember after the fight I went backstage, and you can ask Anthony this yourself, and I said, if we're going to fight again, I need to come and sit down with you, sit down with Joe Gallagher or whoever manages you, and let's talk for proper money, because we've got nothing for tonight. We've sold the Echo Arena out. We sold that place out, and we got pennies for it. So but you live and learn, and you know, and now that's why I want to know. I can pass this knowledge now onto other people now. I know how much people should be getting, what they're worth, and what the fights, you know, who you should fight next and stuff.
You do some brilliant stuff in the community now. I know you're very proud of this. You work with sort of, you work with some disabled people as well, don't you, helping get them into fitness. Your gym is absolutely pumping, isn't it, at the moment? What have you got going on that you're really proud of?
I'm loving the disability boxing, if I'm honest. I started with two people, and we've got 40, every class. 40 to boys and girls coming in, setting the equipment up themselves, enjoying it. You know, these are like people with one limbs and you know, real bad disability, disabled people. And, you know, so to see them put a smile on their face, and, you know, it's brilliant. And I'm hosting a boxing show. I'm doing 15 of my lads and girls are going to fight 15 pros from the city on the 15th of April in Broadway. Got a ring set up. They're going to have a ring walk. We've got ring girls for them. That's the first thing they ask for. Is there any ring girls? We've got ring girls. We've got, you know, 500 tickets on sale as well. So it's going to be an electric night. And the money, what we're going to get in for that, we're going to take disability boxing around the country and, you know, take them to go and watch Anthony Joshua. Take them to go and watch just days out, basically, and so they can enjoy themselves.
Absolutely amazing. Does that give you a real buzz?
Yeah, seeing them, honest to God, it's mad. Like, seeing them, like, I've had people contact me from London. I've had someone text me from Australia saying, what you're doing is brilliant. I'm, you know, I'm in a wheelchair and I'd love something like this in Australia. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And then, you know, it's good. It's really, really good. And, you know, to see them smile and to see them work hard. You know, they've never been given a chance, and here they are. Here we are giving them a chance. Some of them are in wheelchairs and still having a go, and, you know, so there's no excuse.
If people are listening, how could they find a bit more info about that?
Follow me on my Twitter, or basically come down to my gym, down in Liverpool, L3, 2EW, Marylebone Community Centre. We're on the top floor, but there's access. We'll always get you up there, even if you have to put you over my shoulder myself.
Carry you up. Doors are always open. Look, before you go, you've got a massive smile on your face. You seem very content with yourself, and that's lovely to see.
Yeah, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm happy that I can eat what I want, and I've got no more running track for the rest of my life.
What was the first bad thing you ate after you fight?
a burger. Don't tell him this, but Dave Ryan, who was on the show, the Rhino, someone had been to in the arena, Five Guys is next door. It's like it's attached to the arena. And Dave Ryan went to Five Guys, and when he come back, all his food was in his bags. And my cousin went, I'm starving. I went, I need food, I'm gonna faint. And I think Dave Ryan was having a drug test, so my cousin went in his bag, got all the burgers out and gave it to me, and I was eating it. I was like, thanks. But he was looking for his burger, but he didn't want to ask because I think he felt ashamed, but I had it. But he was a big heavyweight and he would have flattened me.
Brilliant. Before you go, you're massive mates with Tony Bellew. He achieved something incredible at the weekend, didn't he? What does he do next without labouring the point? If you're him, from the friend point of view and from the boxing point of view, what does he do next?
From a boxing point of view, he's going to fight again because he's a fighter. And put down his wife. I think she's the boss. And I think Tony knows his wife's the boss. That she might want him to. He'll spend some time with his family. He doesn't need to box. He's a legend. In my eyes, he's the best fighter this city's had. I don't care what anyone says. You know, John Conte was world champion. Paul Hodgson was world champion. But
What singles him out?
Moving up to heavyweight and beating David Hayes, a tremendous fighter. And I think David Hayes was one of the best heavyweights Britain's had. And he beat him easy. For me, even without the foot injury, he beat him easy. And I think what he's done, the weight he's moved through, he's cruiserweight world champion. He's boxed at Goodison as Boyle Club. He beat David Hayes. Can you top that? I don't think. As if I was me, if I was him, I'd do it, I'm done. I'm done. I'd be happy.
You have him down as the best boxer this city's produced. Yeah.
There's no, 100%. 100%. I've always been rated him. And the likes of Tony, he'd be a great pundit as well because he knows the sport inside out. And I, you know, there's always a job for him in boxing, I'd say. But at the same time, he doesn't need it. He can just be happy. Go and sit on a beach, go and lie on a beach with his kids and his wife. And, you know, he's a family man. The main thing about Tony is he's a family man. And, you know, he's a legend in this city. He'll always be a legend. And I've got a feeling he might put a statue outside Goodison for him. I've got a feeling he might do.
Just like the Dixie Dean one. Does it damage his legacy at all if he fights another massive heavyweight, a Deontay Wilder, and it doesn't work?
No, it doesn't, because he's still cruiserweight world champion. Even in that fight, going into that fight, he was win, lose or draw, he was still going to be cruiserweight world champion. So he's still a legend. He's going out on a high. He's going out on the best high. You know, he beat David Day in David Day's own backyard, and the reception Tony got. I'm a massive Red, but the Evertonians, what were in there that night? Wow. Zed cars. It was mad. It was like being at Goodison. It was crazy. So all them deserve a pat on the back. And I'm sure Tony has said that they were outstanding. Even the Cockneys. And everyone from all over the world who were watching that night in the arena, the reception he gave Tony was outstanding.
Steve Hothersall's kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.